We were considering Paul's letter, the part of his second sentence and his first letter found in Galatians. And this is the New Living Translation's rendering of it, which is not a translation, not even really a paraphrase. It's a novelized account. It reads, "I say again what we have said before. If anyone preaches any other good news than the one you welcomed, let that person be cursed." Now, the supposed translation ignored para, which means close or yet in opposition to, because they didn't want this news that Paul was preaching to be considered in opposition to something, even though that was obvious from the context, and even that's what para means, because somebody might actually think and say, what was they in opposition to? The disciples? That turns out to be correct. Yosha? Absolutely. Read the Sermon on the Mount. Yahweh? Perfectly accurate assessment. Again, read the Torah. So they just ignored it. They changed euangelion to good news. At least it wasn't replicated by gospel, which is just a pagan term pulled out of the air to create a Christian religious concept. Really a despicable Christian religious concept, by the way, in terms of gospel, because Christianity is presented as the gospel of grace, and the gospels are labeled Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so it is a religion based upon Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John as gospels. And then they have their Jesus promoting that same gospel when Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were not gospels. Two of the four were not even eyewitnesses, therefore they're hearsay accounts. Yosha never used a word euangelion, much less the pagan term gospel. So you're absolutely misguided when you change the landscape like that. But here, good news is also inappropriate, even though you can mean good. It primarily means healthy and healing and beneficial. And agelos, which is the second part of euangelion, primarily means messenger. That's why it is a translation of the Hebrew malach, which are the spiritual messengers representing Yahweh. And so it would be more correctly healing messenger. And so Paul had a different healing messenger. So by changing it, you're misleading people. But that's the purpose of Christian Bible publications, is to mislead. And then they changed paralambano to welcomed, when that's not what the word means. It's certainly not the primary meaning of the word. The nilt here is the least accurate of the inaccurate English translations. But before we move on, I'd like to underscore a deficiency that has been associated with Paul's last two statements, and indeed with all of Paul's letters. For this to be an effective warning, and Paul is saying now, you're going to be cursed. Any person who is presenting a different message to you is going to be cursed. Now, by the way, Yahweh never says that. Yosha never says that. Free will, you know. The only thing that gets you in trouble with Yahweh is if you deliberately do what Paul is doing and lead people in the wrong direction. And you aren't so much cursed as you are receive the consequence of that, and not in this life. Now, you're free to do it all you want to in this life. There's no curse on this life. God never says, you know, I want you to curse that individual. It's just that person will spend eternity with fellows like Paul, locked up in Sheol. But you're free to do it. Yeah, I mean, if you want to promote Christianity, as I've said in the first hour of the show, you're free to do it. You want to promote any kind of government, political, military lie, you're free to do it. It's just that ultimately there will be a consequence upon your demise. And in this particular case, as is the case throughout Paul's letters, Paul did not present the difference. He's not, at this point, presented his message, and he has not, at this point, presented the message of the cursed adversary. This is his first letter. There's no basis of Pauline doctrine at this point to say, this is the Pauline message, and at this point he hasn't said enough for us to recognize that the opposition is the Torah. It's Yahweh, it's Yosha, it's Yosha's disciples. He hadn't really said enough. And he'll never be explicit in that regard. Although he will infer all the way from here to Sunday morning Christian worship. But if you don't provide people with information, you ought not be in the business of differentiation. You know, I will tell you that Paul's wrong because he says there's a second covenant. And he says the second covenant is a spiritual covenant based upon grace and a New Testament that he himself has responsibility for promoting. That's his covenant. Based upon faith in the gospel of grace. That's Paul's world. With he as the leading spokesperson, the authority. Yahweh's view is that there is only one covenant, and that's the original covenant, and that it has not yet been renewed, and when it is reaffirmed, it will be reaffirmed with Yisrael and with Yahudah, not a bunch of wacko goyim Christianites. And that the only difference between the existing covenant and its reaffirmation and renewal will be that the Torah, which now can be rejected, can be ignored, can be opposed, as Paul is doing, that those who participate in the reaffirmation of the covenant will have the very Torah that Paul is opposed to integrated into the very fabric of their lives by Yahweh himself. And so I can compare those two. I can tell you that there are five terms and conditions presented in the Torah for participating in the covenant. And that Pauline doctrine violates all five of them. I can tell you what Yahweh's path to perfection is along the 7 days that lead from our polluted religious world to his home. And we can compare and contrast what God said to what Paul will ultimately say. But Paul will never do that. Paul simply promotes Paul. You know, if what he's saying here is anybody disagrees with me, let him be cursed. It's not if anybody disagrees with God. It's not if anybody disagrees with Yahusha. It's not if anybody disagrees with the Torah. It's not if anybody disagrees with the words that Yahweh communicated to us through the prophets, let him be accursed. It's not if anyone is opposed to Yisrael and Yahudim and the covenant, let him be accursed. No. If they say something that is different than what I'm saying, let him be cursed. That's what Paul's communicating. There is no one in all of human history who said something akin to this who spoke for God. All of Yahweh's messengers view themselves and their own thoughts, their own ideas as being irrelevant. We can tell you that if you oppose Yahweh's teachings, if you actively engage in opposing the Moed Mikre, in opposing the covenant, in opposing the Torah, which these things are presented to us, opposing Yahweh and his name, that if you oppose those things and you speak deliberately against them, there will be a consequence. But no one who is a member of Yahweh's covenant family ever says, if they disagree with me, let them be cursed. As a matter of fact, our position is the antithesis of this. If you listen to our Friday Shabbat program on this program, on the Shabbat show on Friday on Yada Yada Radio, if you listen to it, one of the things that you will immediately recognize is we're constantly saying, at least I'm constantly saying, I'm imperfect. I am not worthy of being followed. And that you ought to question everything that I say. And I specifically will go into words and the translation of words and explain the variety of options there are to convey the meanings of words and the thought process that went into them. And to share the vulnerability of, you know, it's possible that this is not completely accurate and that I've been wrong in the past. But this is what I think is being conveyed here. And it's a very humble approach that what's important is what God said. We should do everything in our power to get it as accurate as we can and to convey what he had to say in a manner that is consistent with who he is, what he has conveyed in his Torah, and that we ought to search the word's etymological history. We ought to examine how nouns are shaped by the verbs, the action of those, form of those words. We ought to pay attention to the uniqueness of Hebrew being a language that is not stuck in time, that has no past, present, and future tense, that has stems that convey relationships between the speaker and the object of the sentence, usually between God and us, and that verbs that have moods that convey volition. Everything being conveyed in the auspices of free will. We ought to pay a lot of attention to what God has to say, and we ought to be knowledgeable enough in what God has to say to communicate that if you're communicating a message that's wholly inconsistent with Yahweh's testimony, with his covenant, with his Torah, with his Moed Mikre, then you've got a problem. But we would never say if you disagree with us individually, is probably what God hates more than anything. Which is somebody saying, I say again what we said before, if anyone preaches any other message other than the one that you received, let that person be cursed. This is Paul. Paul's not saying that let a person suffer the consequences of contradicting the Torah, because he, in fact, contradicts the Torah. He doesn't say let somebody suffer the consequence of rejecting Yahusha's message, because he rejected Yahusha's message. He doesn't say let somebody face the music if they reject the covenant, because he rejected the covenant. You know, it's one thing to say God's words matter. It's one thing to say God's not changing who he is or his approach. And if you're out of whack with God's approach, then you're squandering your life. And if you are deliberately misleading others, if you're a pope or a cardinal or a bishop or a pastor, and you're deliberately preaching a message that is contrary to Yahweh's message, then what you're doing is counterproductive. You're hurting yourself and you're hurting those people who trust you. But the standard isn't Paul. The standard isn't me by any measure. The standard's Yahweh. His Torah, prophets, and Psalms. If you're in conflict with it, you're in trouble. Now, if you've been beguiled to be in conflict with it because you aren't smart enough to realize that Paul is lying through his teeth, that Paul is promoting Paul, you're not smart enough to figure that out and you're beguiled by the Christian religion, then the consequence is that at the end of your mortal existence, you'll just cease to exist. No hell, no punishment, but no reward. You squandered the opportunity to engage in the covenant because you just didn't care enough to think it through. But if you disagree with me for that, there is no consequence. You're welcome to disagree with me. There is absolutely no consequence whatsoever. God doesn't care. I don't care. Have at it. Last time I checked, there were hundreds of thousands of articles and websites, people who disagree with me. I don't even go to them. I don't read them. I don't visit them. I'm not bothered by them. I don't respond to them. I don't care. And you ought not care. The only thing that matters is whether or not you understand who Yahweh is, you understand what he has said, what he is offering, and how to respond, and whether or not you then engage in the covenant according to the conditions that he has laid out. That's all that matters. But not to Paul. Paul was on his own crusade. It was Paul against the world, against God, against the Torah, against the covenant, against the Moed Mikre. Everything that Yahweh cares about, loves, has communicated, has etched in stone, Paul was adverse to. And so he wanted it known that if you criticize Paul, if you delivered therefore Yahweh's message, which was in opposition to Paul, then he wanted those who bought into his lies to curse you. Lovely man, huh? You know, Paul made his fame, by his own admission, kidnapping and murdering people, beating them savagely. So all he's really done here is he's changed his beatings from physical and his murderous acts from an attack on the mortal body to his blows now are to the soul. This is spiritual death. It's a much more gruesome crime. So it should be known that what Paul is doing here, and it's unequivocal, there is no way to wiggle around this. Paul is saying that if anyone disagrees with him, if anyone says anything that's in conflict with what he is going to communicate, that they're cursed. And yet, everything he says will be contrary to God, contrary to the Torah, contrary to the prophets, contrary to Yosha, contrary to the disciples. So what do you think? Should religious zealots curse those who align themselves with the very creator God of the universe? Is that a good idea? So for Paul's letter, his rant here, and it's a rant, man. When you're telling anybody that disagrees with you that a curse exists on them and you're pretending to speak for God, I mean, there's not a lot of things you can do worse than this, stating that anybody who disagrees with you should be cursed, and you're claiming that you're speaking for God. And that's really bad, man. But for it to be instructive, to be even remotely useful, we have to know what Paul told the Galatians. And he doesn't tell us. He certainly hasn't told us, and he won't tell us. His preaching to the Galatians was not recorded. Moreover, he will never once lay out what specific aspects of Yahweh's testimony, other than circumcision, other than the Torah generally, that he despises. And unless, you know, you're going to say, all right, I propose the following, A, B, C, D, E. For the following reasons, based upon the following evidence. And you accepted that. And then someone came along and proposed something that was contradictory to it. And here is the reason that their argument doesn't hold water. This is, it's not that it disagrees with me that's important. It's how their testimony is inconsistent with Yonah's testimony. But what you find, rather than Paul presenting that, discussing that, articulating that, debating that, it's Paul's testimony, which will ultimately be delivered, that's wholly contrary to God's. So this is just nothing but a nightmare for Christians. We're in the second sentence of Paul's second letter, and there's no recovery. He is the plague of death, just as Yahweh predicted he would be 666 years before he penned these horrible words. So all you have now is speculation unless you've read ahead and know what he's going to propose. False interpretations are far too readily developed, and they're applied religiously. As it stands, all we have is that anyone who delivers a message which differs from Paul's should be cursed, all of which sounds hauntingly similar to the Quran's first 80 surahs as they were delivered chronologically. And while that was designed to censure debate, and while it has kept most critics at bay, particularly in an Islamic country where it's death to criticize or to debate any of this, by repeating his mantra, Paul has tipped his hand. He has said that his skin and doctrine are so thin that neither can tolerate criticism. That's what he's saying here. Rather than debate the opposition, Paul is instead slandering and condemning the opposition. When you do that, when you move to an ad hominem fallacy, which is what he's doing here, he is condemning his opponent personally with the curse. When you use the ad hominem fallacy, it's because you don't have a leg to stand on. It's because you have no way to refute your opposition. It's capitulation in any reasoned debate. It is a sure sign of insecurity that you know that you can't prevail using evidence and reason. That's why people resort to the ad hominem argument. Those who can't defend their message attack those who are critical of it. It's true in politics, and it's known as killing the messenger. Now, introductions aside, here's a quick review of Shaul's second and third sentences. He said, I marvel, I am amazed and astonished, wondering and surprised, that namely, in this way, quickly and in haste, you change. You depart, desert, and become disloyal apostates and traitors, away from your calling in the name of grace, to a different healing message and beneficial messenger. Think about that. Wake up, Christians. He is creating a message based upon the cute little Roman and Greek naked deities called the charities, called the gratia, the graces. That's his message. It's pagan. It's disgusting. It's wholly opposed to God. And yet, that's what he was proposing, and the first to listen to him, those that actually heard Paul preach, rejected him. That's what this sentence says. They rejected him. And so why now, when you don't know the man, do you accept his lie? Goes on to say, which does not exist differently, if not conditionally or hypothetically negated, because perhaps some are the ones stirring you up, confusing you, and also wanting and proposing to change and pervert the beneficial messenger and the healing message of the Christu. But the fact is, he never once, ever, in all 13 of his letters, ever quoted the message of the Messiah. Never once. And the actual message of the Messiah, as it is recorded by the two eyewitnesses, his disciples, Matanyahu and Yohanan, is wholly opposed, completely different than Paul's mantra. But to the contrary, if we or a messenger out of heaven conveys a message or messenger to you, which is approximate or contrary to, beyond or positioned alongside what we delivered as a beneficial messenger and announced as a healing message to you, then a curse with a dreadful consequence exists. Well, there was a messenger out of heaven. His name was Yahusha. He was the Messiah. He was the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. And his message out of heaven, speaking the words that Yahweh put in his mouth, confirming the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, living the Torah, observing the Torah. Yes, they were completely different. And yet, what we have here is Paul cursing Yahusha, cursing him, and yet claiming that his message is the same as his Christo. What he had to do is create, therefore, an entire caricature of his Christo that bore no resemblance to the one that walked out of the pages of the Torah, the one that was the living embodiment, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. As we have said already, and just now, immediately thereafter, repetitively, I say, if under the condition someone delivers a helpful messenger or communicates a useful message to you, contrary to or in opposition to, close or approximate to, even greater than what you received, it shall be, in fact, I command and want it to exist as a curse with a dreadful consequence. Galatians 1, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Now that should be enough if you're an informed, rational person to be disgusted by Pauline Christianity, to rip Paul's letters, all 13 of them, as well as Hebrews, which he inspired, out of your Christian New Testament, and while you're at it, ripping the designation New Testament from the book as well. If it's not sufficient, then you're not thinking. Now, as we move to the next statement, while the interrogative required to frame the questions presented in most English translations does not appear in the Greek text, they are implied because Paul is asking us to choose. These questions, however, are rather odd considering that Paul has pitted his message against God. Also, the first is advanced using a peculiar verb, one that runs the gamut from perplexing to inappropriate, from conceited to bewildering. If I may, since the writing quality is so poor, let's begin with the Nestle Allen McReynolds interlinear. This supposed literal translation of the oldest manuscripts reads, "Now for men I persuade, or the God, or I seek men to please, if still men, I was pleasing of Christ, slave not I was." End quote. I'm going to read that to you again. I just want you to know how pathetically awful this man's letter was. And then I want you to think that if he was inspired by God, how stupid that God, how illiterate that God had to be. Now for men I persuade, or the God, or I seek men to please. If still men, I was pleasing of Christ, not slave, not I was. Yoda in Star Wars is vastly more articulate than this. Amplified, more consistent with the original text. This is what he wrote in Galatians 1:10. For currently men I persuade, or the God, or I seek to please men. Yet nevertheless, if men, I was pleasing and accommodating slave of Christu, certainly not was me. We'll be back to unravel this puzzle to the best we can after the commercial break. Imagine thinking this is scripture, that God inspired these words word for word, the inerrant word of God. For currently men I persuade. It says pitho, I presently active. And actually use words to win favor of. I seduce, mislead, coax, convince, appease, and placate. Or alternatively, the God. Or I seek to please men. Yet nevertheless, if men, I was pleasing and accommodating slave of Christu. Certainly, not was me. We have Glenn on the line. Glenn, do you own a secret decoder ring where you can turn the bezel of the ring and come up with an intelligent rendering of this cacophony of words?
Cacophony? Actually, I'm kind of wondering why you're picking on word order if you're reading from an interlinear, because interlinears don't correct for word order, and as such, aren't strictly translations. I mean, This is part and parcel of using an interlinear. You have to complete the translation by correcting the word order. That's an interlinear is just sort of a lexical aid, not a translation.
I would tell you that if you change the word order here, you're not making it any better. You know, the first word is going to be for or because, and in English or Greek, the second word is going to be currently speaking of the time, which is arty, in Greek or English. The third word is going to be men, anthropos, regardless of English or Greek. And the first verb appears as in first person. It is pitho, and it's not going to change in its place in the sentence, regardless of the interlinear or the Greek. And then if it's followed by or, which is the alternative, tone, which is the definite article, and then a placeholder for God, doesn't change. I mean, you can't render those words. I mean, I give you an hour and let you cut each of those words out and try them in different order and come up with something better. What are you going to do? Make it the God I persuade for currently men? Or are you going to make it or men I persuade for currently the God? I mean, have at it.
Well, it would be like the God for whom I currently persuade men, or, you know, and, you know, the...
I don't know. I mean, frankly, I don't know.
Well,
frankly, no one can know.
Well, I don't know about that. Actually, you know, like, I have neither a UBS text nor an interlinear in front of me at the moment. You know, I have to sit down.
If there was an interrogative in this sentence, if there was one, which there isn't, you could begin it with, am I, and if you would have to change the tense of the verb, persuading men, get rid of the gar, You could probably include.
Well, I think you got sort of an implied prepositional praise to God for whom I presently persuade men, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah,
but the words aren't there, and I've checked. There's a papyrus. Actually, it's a papyrus. It's a codex, so it's written on papyrus of this particular sentence that was memorialized within 25 to 50 years of the time that it's written, and there's no interrogative there.
I'm not implying it's an interrogative. I'm just saying that, you know, word order. Yeah, it's not necessarily diverse. I haven't exegeted this particular passage, but to make sense.
I'm going to give you the opportunity, Glenn, at your leisure, to hopefully call in the program tomorrow, and you get gar, ante, pitho, e, tone, and a placeholder for God. And those are the words. I'm going to let you put them in any order you want and to make sense of them. Now, what you can do is what the translations have all done, which is to add words to suppose that he actually wrote, to pretend that he wrote an interrogative. You can do that. But that's all you can do. And the same thing holds true with what follows. Or, I seek a zeto to please Aresco men. They got two ors here and a group of words connected by prepositions and verbs, and they don't make any sense.